Part 3. William's Brilliant Plan. The faithful outlaws looked at their leader expectantly. Had he really got a plan?
Well, began William, our parents won't actually take us to Violet Elizabeth's old party. They don't take us to parties now. They only took us to parties when we were young. They've not actually taken us to parties for years.
Well, how's that going to help?
Said Ginger.
Well, sobvious. We can start out to it, but... His voice sank to a sinister note. We won't actually get there.
The outlaws stared at William.
Gosh, said Douglas apprehensively. What's going to happen to us?
We'll meet at the crossroads near the hall, said William, and we'll go off to the woods. We won't go to the old party.
He warmed to his theme.
I'm not playing any kissing games for anyone. And I once heard someone say that it was the duty of everyone to fight against tyranny. And this sickening party is tyranny. So, that's what we'll do. We'll go and do our duty fighting against tyranny.
They considered the suggestion for a moment or two in silence, with mingled excitement and misgiving.
We'll die a thousand deaths, all right, when they find out, said Ginger.
All right, said William. All right, if you'd rather play sickening kissing games with Violet Elizabeth Bott and her sickening old aunt, you can. I'm going off to the woods on the day of the party, and if you don't want to come with me, don't.
But they did want to come with him. They clamoured to come with him. They flung their doubts aside and viewed the prospect with spirits that rose higher and higher the more they viewed it.
We'll have a jolly good time, said William. It doesn't matter what we do, because we'll be getting in a row anyway, so we might as well get in a big one as a little one.
A big one's more exciting than a little one, in a way, said Henry. Yes, it sort of makes it more worthwhile, said Ginger.
Well, this ridiculous old party starts at 3:30 on Wednesday, said William. So we'll meet at the crossroads just before then, and we'll go off to the woods and have a jolly good time.
Mrs. Brown was surprised by William's meekness and docility when the time came to prepare him for the party. She had expected passionate protests, wild excuses, torrential spates of eloquence, but it was in comparative silence that he allowed himself to be cleaned, scoured, brushed, and encased in his best clothes, like an offering decked for sacrifice. Mrs. Brown was touched, and even a little remorseful.
I'm sure you'll enjoy yourself, dear, she said.
Yes, I bet I will, said William.
You'll be glad you went.
William agreed.
And perhaps your father and I will give you a little something this evening, in return for whatever you've been through.
William thought that, too, was highly probable.
Shining with cleanliness, their shoes brightly polished, their socks neatly gartered, the outlaws assembled at the crossroads. They looked at each other sheepishly, awed by the immensity of the crime they were about to commit. Never before had they, or indeed any of their acquaintances, played truant from a party.
"Well, come on," said William gruffly. "Let's get away quick before anyone sees us."
They set off down the road and entered the woods, walking in a furtive, guilty fashion down the shady path. They felt ill at ease in their best suits and polished shoes. They felt vaguely ashamed to be there, so brushed and cleansed and neatly apparelled, in a place that was wont to see them muddy and dishevelled, wearing battle-scarred shorts and pullovers.
"I wonder what they'll do when they find we're not coming to it," said William.
"They'll ring up our mothers," said Ginger.
"And then they'll ring up the police," said Henry. "Gosh," said Douglas, with mingled apprehension and pride. "Real policemen looking for us."
"And all our mothers wondering where we are," said Ginger.
"I bet mine'll guess all right," said William gloomily.
"Could we pretend we'd tried a shortcut through the woods and got lost?" suggested Ginger.
"No," said William. "No, you can't get lost in a place you've lived in all your life."
"We might pretend we'd lost our memories," said Henry.
"I've tried that before," said William. "It didn't work.
We could pretend we'd met a hypnotiser and got hypnotised, said Ginger. We could act as if we'd been hypnotised. We could keep shutting our eyes and then opening them and saying, where am I?
Or that we'd heard cries for help and gone to the rescue, said Henry.
Or, said Douglas, that we'd been dragged into the woods by smash and grab thieves and tied to a tree and robbed.
Or that we'd gone to save an old man's life that was being attacked by a savage animal. A fox, for instance.
Foxes aren't savage animals, said William.
Well, this one might have been. He might have gone mad.
Or the old man might have gone mad.
Or they might have both gone mad and turned on us, both raving mad.
And chased us round the woods.
So we had to climb a tree to escape the jaws of death.
And then just when we thought we'd escaped them, they climbed it too, both raving mad.
And we had to swing ourselves into the next tree by the branches.
Foxes can't climb trees, said William.
Well, I bet a mad one could.
And we had to keep swinging ourselves from tree to tree with this mad old man and this mad fox after us, roaring and growling, snapping at our heels,
with the jaws of death looming in front of us.
Yes. They found the imaginary adventure exhilarating and might have continued it indefinitely if Douglas had not distracted their attention by making a sudden dive behind a bush.
What's the matter? Said William. Nothing. Said Douglas, emerging with a nervous, apologetic smile. I thought for a minute that I heard that policeman coming after us. He looked up and down the empty path. But I couldn't have.
Of course you couldn't, you chump, said William. Gosh, fancy being afraid of a policeman anyway. They're only human, same as everyone else. Why, I once met one that kept a goldfish.
But something of Douglas's nervousness had communicated itself to them.
Perhaps we'd better get off the path for a bit, said William, just in case someone comes after us.
He led the way to a fallen log at the foot of an oak tree, screened from the path by a dense holly bush. They had used the log frequently as a jumping-off ground to the lowest branch of the oak tree. But though they looked up at it longingly, they lacked the spirit to add to the dark crime of playing truant from a party the further and darker crime of climbing trees in their best clothes. They took their seats in a row on the log, four immaculately clothed, somewhat worried-looking small boys.
"I bet mine won't let me go to the fair next week after this," said Ginger gloomily. "I don't suppose mine'll give me any pocket money for the rest of my life," said Henry.
"And I bet if this policeman catches us, he'll drag us off to prison," said Douglas. I don't see how keeping a goldfish is going to stop him.
We'll all die a thousand deaths one way or another, said Henry.
And it'll be worth it, said William with spirit. Gosh, I'd enjoy dying a thousand deaths to get out of that soppy party.
Yes, we would too,
they assured him, taking courage, as usual, from his buoyant confidence.
Course we would.
Do you know what I think, said Ginger slowly. I think it's civilization that's wrong. If there wasn't any civilization, there wouldn't be any soppy parties. Someone ought to put a stop to it.
Yes, agreed Henry.
I can't think why people have gone on with it all these years. I heard someone talking about a book they'd read the other day, and it was about some people that were all that was left after an atom war, and they were starting civilization again, but they wanted a better civilization.
Well, that was a jolly good idea, said William. Gosh, wouldn't it be fun if just us four were left after an atom war and we could start a better civilization?
Yes, said Henry. These people wanted to start a civilization that was all art and learning and no war.
I don't know about that, said William doubtfully. We've tried learning and there's not much sense in it. Gosh, we've wasted years of our life wearing out our brains over arithmetic and history and stuff and, well, there just isn't any sense in it. I think civilization'd be better without learning.
There's not much sense in art, either, said Ginger.
No, there isn't, agreed William. What's the point of drawing things? It's a batty thing to do. There's trees and animals and rivers and such like in real life. And they're all right in real life, but what's the point of drawing them on pieces of paper? You can't climb a tree on a piece of paper, or ride a horse on a piece of paper, or swim a river on a piece of paper. So what's the point of putting them there? Why not leave them in real life where they belong?
And war,
said Henry.
War's wrong, said Douglas, primly.
No, no, it's weapons that's wrong, said William. War's all right without weapons. You can have a jolly good fight without weapons. We'd keep war, but not weapons.
We could have sticks, said Ginger. A stick's jolly useful in a fight.
Yes, agreed William. When countries went to war, we'd have them all meeting in a big empty place, and everyone could have a stick, and they could fight there, and the side that ran away would have lost the war, and the other side would have won it. It needn't take long. I've been in some jolly good fights that were over in a few minutes.
I've known them take longer than that, said Douglas. Well, if it was a long one, I suppose we could have half time with ice creams.
And lollies.
And chocolates.
And coconut ice. And...
Shush, said Douglas. There's someone coming.
They listened. Footsteps were approaching along the woodland path.
Freeze, whispered William urgently. Try and look like tree trunks.
Without much success, they tried to look like tree trunks. Douglas's face grew purple with the effort. Henry grabbed a leafy twig and put it in his mouth, swallowing half of it by mistake. Ginger drew the collar of his jacket, as far as it would go, over his head. William contented himself with fixing a set ferocious glare on the holly bush. The footsteps drew nearer, and suddenly a small upright figure appeared. It was an elderly woman wearing boots, a pork pie hat, and a large tweed overcoat. She strode along the path using a long folded umbrella as a walking stick. She did not glance in their direction until, just when the danger seemed over, Douglas, relaxing from the tension of being a tree, fell over backwards and let out a loud yell as his head struck the ground. The woman stopped and threw a startled glance around. The startled glance rested on the outlaws, and she strode up to them through the bushes.
"What are you doing?" she said.
They looked at her, scowling suspiciously.
"Just sitting," said William, coldly.
"Resting," said Ginger.
"Thinking," said Douglas.
"Having a little talk about civilization," said Henry, removing the remains of his twig from his mouth. "Oh, I'll join you," said the newcomer.
She had a small, wizened face, bright blue eyes, and a long, humorous mouth.
"I'm rather tired."
She took her seat at the end of the log.
"And what do you think about civilization?"
"I wouldn't have any grown-ups in it if I had my way," said William.
He was outraged by this invasion of their privacy. His scowl had grown so ferocious that every feature in his face seemed to be distorted by it.
"This woman," he thought, "might betray their hiding-place. She must be got rid of as soon as possible."
He added his petrifying glare to his ferocious scowl. The woman seemed unmoved by it.
"And I wouldn't have any children in it," she said.
She gave a sudden chuckle. "You'll never guess what I'm doing now." William was silent for a moment or two, torn between his natural curiosity and his desire to freeze off the intruder by ignoring her. His natural curiosity won.
"What?" he said. "I'm running away from a children's party."